"Nerves and exhaustion, that's all it is," she assured herself. "It would be strange if I didn't have a sense of dread creeping with me after what I've been through." Still, she couldn't shake the fear. She imagined walking through the roundhouses and finding everyone slain, just as she had found Conniger's men lying among the trees. What she actually saw when she stepped through the open gate was far less macabre, but far more disturbing. Everyone on the doll was awake, and standing in perfect rows in front of the lodge, facing the gate. Persephone was startled at the size of the crowd. Even on meeting nights, when everyone was supposed to show up, not everyone did. The sick and injured didn't come, and there were always sick and injured. Usually, those caring for them stayed home too. A doll the size of Wren required a lot of food, and there was always a hunting party or two that would be out, sometimes for weeks. And then there were those who didn't want to come. Hedera had stopped bothering to show up years ago. More disturbing than the number of people assembled was the way in which they were grouped. Sarah was nowhere near Delwyn or Bryn. Roan was in the front row, even though Gifford was in the back, and Moya was shoulder to shoulder with Tressa.
"Something is very wrong," Persephone whispered.
"Sarah? Moya?" Persephone called out. "What's going on? Why are you all out here?"
No one moved or spoke, and there wasn't a smile among them.
But in their eyes, Persephone saw screams. Wraith pointed toward the storage pit at a remarkable sight. 2 tethered horses. The Frey laid Maeve on the grass. Nephron drew his sword from its scabbard, and it made a gentle hiss against the metal sheath. The giant pulled free his massive sword. Sebek pulled both of his blades, and Tekchin drew forth a thin, delicate blade. Malcolm held his spear at the ready. Beside Persephone, Wraith put a hand on his sword, but didn't draw it. Mina let out a low, guttural growl, and Suri bent over to pat her neck. They moved forward as a group, but had taken only a few steps when a tall Frey, as hairless as Arion, emerged from the lodge and stopped them with his stare. Numerous rings pierced the skin of his ears, cheeks and nose, and chains hung between them. On his hands, the fingernails were so long that they curled around themselves in yellowed swirls. His chest was bare, and he wore a skirt of gold. A mantle, also gold, draped across his shoulders and flowed to the ground. Beside him came a smaller, younger Frey, wearing a shimmering robe of purple and white, the hood of the garment raised.
"Nephron, son of Zephron."
The god of chain spoke in Frey, and his voice boomed with unnatural volume.
"We've been waiting for you."
"Surely that is a god," Persephone thought.
Not a kind or benevolent one, but the embodiment of great and terrifying power. His face lacked even a single hint of compassion. Beside the god, the younger Frey shifted his weight and fidgeted with nervous excitement, like a boy on his first hunt. Behind them, 8 more Frey strode through the lodge doorway. They carried swords and wore armor similar to that of the Galantians, but they had helms shaped like the heads of lions. They took up positions on either side of the younger Frey, and stood in stiff lines, not dissimilar to the way everyone else was standing. The god of chains walked forward, descending the steps of the lodge and moving through the ranks of villagers, who shifted in perfect unison to allow his passage. The other Frey remained on the elevated porch, watching.
"Grendel, you cuckold cur and craven whore's son!" Nephron replied in runic.
Persephone held her breath, her eyes wide, but the god of chains merely stared at Nephron with suspicion.
"It's a common rune welcome," Nephron said, this time in Frey. "I'm certain."
Drendel advanced until he stood in the exact center of the doll, with the villagers behind him and the Galantians in front.
"You know why I'm here."
"Of course. You finally found wisdom and decided to join the Instaria. Unfortunately, we don't..."
Nephron collapsed to his knees, fell forward, and gasped for air.
"I'm not Petragar," Grendel said, baring his teeth. "And I'm not Arian. I won't be toyed with. I have full authority to act as the Thane in these forsaken lands. You know what that means. All of you stand guilty of rebellion. Rebellion against your Thane, against your god, and against nature."
Grendel walked around Nephron, and as he did, Persephone felt a jolt, as if an invisible giant had grabbed hold of her neck and wrists and shoved her back a step. The unexpected lurch knocked Math's spear from her hand. The weapon fell to the grass, and she was unable to retrieve it. The unseen giant hands held her so tightly that she couldn't move. She couldn't speak, and could barely breathe.
"Fenelaus is dead. She who ushered in the new order was an anchor. It's time for the Mirrelief to assume their proper place as gods, and for ordinary Frey to realize they're just one more race that crawls upon the world."
Grendel bent slightly to look at Nephron, who remained on his knees, his face clenched in pain. Stryker made a noise, something no one else had managed. The goblin also succeeded in sluggishly raising his clawed hands. This caught the god's attention.
"You have a gazelle, I see. An obadassa. An abomination. The art is not for the likes of them."
Grendel made a slight motion with his fingers, and the goblin flew backward. The sounds the goblin made weren't the cry of a man, but the high-pitched shriek of an animal, not unlike the noises Conniger had made. But the goblin's screams didn't last as long. After some snapping, he became still and silent. Grendel looked toward the young Frey standing on the lodge's porch.
"Have you met the prince, Nephron? This is Moandoulé, son of Lothian, come to see how gods conduct themselves, to witness justice. I'm his teacher, and you are today's lesson. The Thane has granted me the power of execution to deal with the trouble you've caused. You have displeased us, and for that, I'll take your life, just as I crushed it out of your gazelle. But let it not be said that I am an ungenerous god. Your life is over, but I'll allow the Galantians to live if they repent for their crimes, if they bow and worship, as is proper."
He pointed to the gathered villagers.
"As your god, I demand a sacrifice. Demonstrate your remorse. The runes are a plague upon the face of Elan, and you have wallowed with them for far too long. Destroy them. Cut them down as evidence that you are still worthy to be called Frey. In return, I'll grant you permission to live. Sacrifice their lives to your new gods, to the Mirrelief, and I'll forgive your weaknesses. What is your answer?"
"We don't take orders from Akulina Bredith," Sebek said.
Persephone didn't understand either word, but Grendel certainly did. His eyes widened, and his lips drew back, revealing white teeth. Just then, The prince stepped forward, a puzzled look on his face.
You care more for rune animals than your own people? Your own friends?
Nephron looked up at the prince, helpless.
Grendel, let him speak,
Mwandule requested.
As you wish,
the god of chain said, and the strain on Nephron's face lessened.
It is not that I care so much for the runes, Nephron said, but more that I hate you. You, your father, all the Mirrorleaf, and most of all, this miserable excuse for...
Nephron grunted in pain, his words choked off.
Hate?
The prince asked incredulously. He uncovered his head, revealing that he too was as bald as Arion and the god of chains. He took a step forward, as if to present himself more clearly, as if it was possible that Nephron didn't recognize him.
How can you hate me? I'm your prince.
Grendel twitched a finger, and Nephron could speak again, although his voice was strained.
You're not my prince. You're a worthless Mirrorleaf. Worthless?
The prince looked stunned.
The Mirrorleaf are your betters. I should think at a moment such as this you'd be painfully aware of that fact. How can you deny it? Because power doesn't equal worth, Arion said.
She stepped through the lodge door, walking slow and favoring her left side.
Wisdom, the sort that your grandmother Fenelais employed, is a far greater virtue.
She turned to Grendel.
I told you that I had agreed to take Nephron's proposal to Fane Lothian. This madness can end in a sensible conclusion that doesn't require rivers of blood.
Acting as Fane, I've heard and rejected that proposal,
Grendel replied.
You can't!
Arion descended the porch steps with some effort, and approached the god of chains. Grendel fixed her with a withering stare.
I am empowered by Fane Lothian to do as I see fit.
As a member of the Mirrorleaf, I demand that the Fane personally hear what I have to say.
As a member of the Mirrorleaf?
Grendel sneered.
Not any more. As you explained, your wound has ejected you from our order.
A Mirrorleaf is not defined solely by the art.
Of course we are.
Arion faced him in the center of the doll, in the open lawn beside the common well where the Galantians had camped, where the ladies of the doll had led a well raid, and where Persephone had married Reglan.
Now two godlike beings in shimmering clothes stood on that same grass, glaring at each other like a pair of contentious thunderclouds, and Persephone felt the same unease as if a storm were rising.
The Fane needs to know what I've discovered about the Rune Girl, about Suri. I won't let you kill them,
Arion said in a low voice.
Grendel laughed. How will you stop me?
He faced the porch and looked to Mwandule.
Power does equal worth. You are seeing the proof of that today. Fenelais appointed Arion as your teacher because of her wisdom, I have to assume. Shall we see how well she fares against me?
He offered Arion a chilling smile.
Go back to your bed, Arion. I'll grant leniency because I suspect that blow to your head has relieved you of your better sense. And because I'm certain the prince still harbors some misplaced appreciation of you.
But I told you, Suri is...
Quiet!
Grendel shouted, and turned his attention back to the Galantians.
Your leader is going to die. You can't save him, so save yourselves. I won't ask again. Destroy the villagers or...
Take off bandages.
As Suri took a step forward, everyone who could do so turned to look at the young mystic.
Said it would come back, Suri said to Arion. Take off bandages.
How are you speaking? Grendel asked.
With my mouth, she said. Does everyone play that game?
I've silenced you.
Suri offered only a shrug. She looked back at Arion.
The bear was only a bear, but...
She pointed at Grendel.
His name is... Grindal. Yes?
Arion's eyes widened.
Yes.
Suri nodded.
The last part of the name was burned. Take off bandages I made for you, and it come back.
You sure?
Arion asked.
Pretty sure.
It's a rune. It can't be speaking.
Grendel insisted, continuing to stare at Suri in shock.
That's Suri, Arion explained. The one you said couldn't exist, remember?
She began unwrapping the bandages from her head. A week's worth of fuzz and a horrible discolored bruise emerged. Once the cloth was off, Arion's eyes went wide. She sucked in a startled breath and staggered back a step. The bandages fell from her hand, revealing a series of runes drawn on the underside, the same Derg markings from the walls of the Roll. Grendel scowled at Suri.
Abomination! Worse than the goblin! A rune with the art!
He raised his hands toward her, but Arion raised hers as well. A warm wind blew past Persephone, billowing her hair.
Grendel spun and glared at Arion. I'm feeling better, she said, and I won't let you hurt them. Any of them.
With those words, Persephone felt the pressure leave her throat, and she could move again. Nephron got to his feet, and the villagers staggered. Mothers rushed to their children, and husbands embraced and shielded their families. Some scurried off to their homes, but the vast majority stayed, eyes fixed to the center of the doll, where Grendel and Arion faced off.
Suri has the art, Arion declared. The runes aren't animals, aren't worthless in the eyes of Feral. This changes everything.
It changes nothing, Grendel said, except to reveal that the runes are a greater threat than previously realized.
He turned and looked at Montoulet.
Leave, my prince, and be quick. It is time I erased the rune menace. You would be wise to leave as well, Arion. I'm done playing games.
The ground began to tremble. Persephone felt the vibration in her legs. Near the well, a rake fell. Along the side of the lodge, two splits fell off the woodpile. Dirt shook out from between the logs of the walls. Sheep bolted in panic. Mina retreated behind Suri. And overhead, the clear sky grew dark with violent, expanding clouds.
Here it comes, Nephron said, trying to steady himself. I hate this part.
Arion clapped her hands. The ground stopped shaking. The sky cleared.
Grendel glared at her again. He looked to the prince. Do you see that she is interfering with the Fane's orders?
The Fane doesn't have all the facts, Arion said. The Fane's orders are outdated.
I want you to witness that she is defying your father's edict. Do you understand?
He said directly to the boy. Mondulay nodded.
It's important you do, because I must exercise the power granted to me by your father, and not just with Nephron, but Arion as well. This problem is too big, too deep for half measures. I was ordered to bring the thunder, and by the power vested in me, I shall.
Grendel, don't! Arion shouted.
Grendel said a single word and clapped his hands. Arion grunted and cringed, glaring at Grendel with a stiff, strained expression, as if in great pain or suffering from heavy exertion. Then she folded her hands together and muttered softly. When she opened her hands, a gust of wind blew Grendel onto his back.
"Seriously, Grendel?" she asked with an incredulous look. "I'm not one of your arena opponents, and I'm not a goblin witch doctor."
In an ominous jingle of rings and chains, Grendel got to his feet.
"You're right. You're Senslor, aren't you? Let's put that to the test, shall we?"
"Let's not. What you're doing is crazy," Arion said.
"You shouldn't have interfered," Grendel told her. "It shows a lack of intelligence, a lack of foresight. Lothian granted me the blessing of Feral. I'll kill you without consequence, but you can't attempt the same. Besides, on your best day, I have always had more power, more skill. And Arion, this isn't your best day."
Grendel whirled his arms as if opening invisible curtains, and then made hooking gestures with all of his fingers, causing his nails to whip. A whirlwind curled around Arion, wrapping the Asuka around her and lifting her into the air. Arion was only a few feet off the ground when she shouted words Persephone didn't understand. The winds died, and Arion fell, collapsing to her knees. Even Persephone could tell the tornado had been a distraction. Before Arion hit the ground, Grendel had begun singing an incomprehensible tune and working an intricate pattern with his hands. As he did, the air above the doll changed, losing transparency. Through it, the light of the sun narrowed and was aimed directly at Arion. Seeing it, she made her own gestures, rotating her hands as if winding a rope. Grendel threw his arm forward as if throwing a ball, and a brilliant beam of blazing white light came from the sun and fired through the distortion. Whatever Arion was doing, she completed it none too soon, and deflected the blinding flash with her hands. The white-hot beam of light ricocheted off her palms, ripping across the ground between them. It left a scorched line as Arion struggled to redirect the light at Grendel. When the light got close, Grendel dropped his arms and stopped singing, and the light vanished. The two glared at each other across the zigzagging line of burnt grass. Nothing moved within the walls of the doll. The remaining villagers watched with wide eyes and gaping mouths. No force held Persephone any longer, but she didn't dare move. Like everyone else, she held her breath in the face of powers beyond her comprehension. Arion was breathing hard, perhaps hoping Grendel might yield. He didn't. With a shout and a full body spin that flared his golden mantle, he raised his palms to the sky, and with them rose the Killian's roundhouse. The whole building ascended, logs, daub, and thatch roof. A number of people scattered as the Killian's home hurtled skyward. Then, just as expected, it fell. Aimed at Arion, the house plummeted, and as it did, Grendel clapped his hands and set the whole thing on fire. With a punch to the air, Arion split the house in half. The divided dwelling crashed to the ground on either side of her. Both halves burst on impact, sending sparks and flaming debris in all directions. Few things were more dangerous to a doll than fire, and despite the obvious perils, Persephone finally found a purpose.
Bring goods to the well, she shouted, and ran forward as an unnatural wind blew, spreading the fire to Sarah and Delwyn's home, as well as Autumn and Figgs. Tope Highland was ahead of her. Grabbing a jug already filled with water, he ran toward Sarah's roundhouse. No! Arion shouted in runic. But it was too late. Tope threw the jug's contents on the nearest flames, but the water never reached them. Instead, the spray of droplets froze into 100 shards as sharp as daggers, and flew toward Arion. Flames Persephone had hoped to extinguish were snuffed out as Arion stole the heat and used it in a single bright burst that turned the ice into steam, leaving a hazy mist in its wake. With growing anger, Grendel darkened the sky. A swirling storm churned overhead, the likes of which Persephone had never seen. Morning turned to twilight as black, sooty clouds boiled and spun. Arion moved her fingers feverishly, but to no avail. Instead, she staggered and cursed. Soon lightning flashed behind the blanket of clouds. Pops of blue-white fingers flickered. Persephone felt her scalp tingle as one twisted bolt crashed to the ground right before her. Blinded, she staggered backward and fell with an undignified scream that went unheard amid the chorus of cries that erupted as bolt after bolt of lightning rained down. Persephone cowered on the grass in terror as the world around her ripped apart in a nightmare of blinding flashes and sizzling cracks. She clutched at the grass and felt cloth strips beneath her fingers, Arion's bandages. Piercing the roar of thunder, Arion sang a calming song. The lightning lessened, and the thunder ceased. The clouds broke, letting sunlight beam through. In the aftermath, more fires burned, and scorch marks blackened the area directly around Arion, who remained standing within a smoking circle. Grendel, you... Arion started to say, but the ring-adorned god stomped the ground and threw out his arms. Persephone saw a worrisome, puzzled look on Arion's face. A moment later, the ground beneath her began to bubble. Dirt turned to mud, and mud to tar, into which Arion sank. She started to speak and raise her hands, but Grendel struck her with a stunning blow of wind that slammed her to the ground, where the bubbling tar gripped and dragged her down. No! Suri cried. Persephone watched as the young mystic focused on Grendel and rubbed her hands together. Then she clapped. To Persephone's, and certainly the god's amazement, Grendel burst into flame. Being close enough to feel the heat, Persephone retreated from the burning god. She'd taken only 3 strides when Grendel put out the fire, but Suri had caught him off guard. When the flames were snuffed out, his cape and skirt were both blackened and his skin reddened. With a horrific cry, Grendel searched for Suri and spotted her where she had always been, just inside the wall between the gate and the storage pit. He raised his hands and began intoning a savage incantation. A blur of white streaked past Persephone as Mina launched herself at the god. Claws ripped at rings and teeth at chains. Grendel screamed in pain as several piercings were torn out. He uttered a desperate syllable and the wolf flew through the air. Mina yelped when she hit the grass. Helgaveri! Grendel shouted, and shoved a palm toward the animal. Mina! Suri cried, as an unseen force tore up the sod, creating a deep furrow as it raced toward the stunned animal. Wraith dove, catching Mina in his arms as he did. Together they rolled aside as the tearing force carried past, blowing open a hole through the doll's wall that was large enough to put a road through. Logs, dirt, and grass exploded outward and down the side of the hill, leaving a cloud of dust and a new view of the forest.
Kill them all!
Grendel ordered his soldiers, as he winced in pain and gingerly touched the wounds on his face and chest. The Frey and the Lionhelms drew their weapons and climbed down from the porch.
To arms! Nephron ordered, and the Galantians drew their weapons and fanned out to block the approaching Lionhelmed soldiers.
Metal clashed as the opposing Frey turned the center of the Dahl into a battlefield. Still near the well, Nephron blocked swings but didn't return blows. Sebek, the one with the twin swords, was less considerate. He gleefully disarmed his opponent, threw him to the grass, and then stepped on his knee, popping it. Grigor just picked up one of the Frey warriors and tossed him across the yard.
Move!
Wraith ordered, grabbing Persephone's arm and pulling her back toward the gate where Suri had reunited with Mina. As they ran, the ground began to shake. Persephone looked at Grendel, expecting some new horror, but the god of considerably fewer chains was still focused on his wounds and appeared to be working at healing himself. One of the braziers near the well toppled. All across the Dahl, thatch shook free of roofs, and the entire woodpile beside the lodge collapsed. Everyone staggered, several fell, and the fight between the opposing Frey paused. Both sides drew back in confusion. Everyone looked at Grendel, but he appeared to be just as puzzled. The mystery was short-lived, as the bubbling pool of tar erupted in a geyser of water. The force was enough to knock them all off their feet and spray the Dahl with a fine mist of scalding water and hot mud. When the mist cleared, Persephone saw Arion rising out of the hole, pushing to her feet. She was coughing, mud-covered, and slow to stand, but she managed it. Panting for air, she faced Grendel once again. Wraith had dragged Persephone to the gate and wasn't stopping. She realized he intended to get her out of there, and, as wise as that was, she couldn't leave. Persephone hauled back on her arm and broke free of his grip.
"We have to fight," she told him.
"How? With what?"
he asked, shocked. She didn't have an answer. She didn't even have Math's spear anymore. All she held was Arion's old bandages. She averted her eyes, unable to face his pleading expression, when she had no reasonable answer. All she had was stubbornness and an overwhelming sense of obligation. She couldn't abandon her family. She would rather die with them than... As she unconsciously wrung the bandages, charcoal rubbed off in her hands. Realization struck, and she shot a look to Wraith and the Durg shield he carried.
Oh, blessed Mera!
An instant later, her head filled with an incredible pain, as a ringing erupted in her ears. Everyone on the Dahl, with the exception of Arion, whose fingers were intensely working patterns in the air, threw hands to their heads. Several, including Grendel, fell to their knees. Where he sprawled, the grass grew at an astounding rate, grasping his wrists and fingers. The vegetation where he'd been standing attacked the ring god with a fury, wrapping his legs and climbing along his body to enclose his face. Stronger, longer roots reached out of the soil and looped around the thrashing god, pinning him with 100 tiny straps. The ringing faded. Persephone took the moment to speak to Wraith, and Nephron whispered something to Grigor. The giant drew his massive sword and charged the Miraleth's prone form.
No!
Arion shouted. Taking her eyes off Grendel, she cast a spell that knocked the giant off his feet and the sword from his hand. That was all it took. The grass appeared to have second thoughts about holding the ringed god any longer, and two fingers on Grendel's left hand moved. Arion was thrown hard on her back, knocking the wind from her. The grass around Grendel shriveled and died. He tore himself free just as Grigor retrieved his sword and started his swing. Then the giant simply stopped. He froze with the great blade partway through a horizontal swing aimed for Grendel's neck. Arion gasped for air, but still managed to move her fingers. As she did, the giant was enclosed in what looked to be a soap bubble. Now it was her turn to suffer the imprisonment of grass, as hundreds of blades began clutching at her fingers and ankles, wrapping around her head and across her mouth. Grendel turned to face the giant, taking particular interest in the sword and how close it had come.
"You dare challenge me, Grenmorian!"
Grendel made a quick motion with his fingers. A burst of light ignited in a flash all around Grigor, but the attack broke harmlessly against the bubble.
"Medak, no!"
Nephron shouted, as another Galantian, the small one with the knives, threw one and then chased it with another. Both blades disappeared with a hiss and a cloud of vapor. Grendel squeezed a fist, and Medak screamed until his head caved in. Grendel frowned at the fray with a furious glare. He glanced back at the giant, but he was still protected by the bubble. Blood dripped down Grendel's chest, where rings had been torn out, and his skin was red and blotchy from the fire. With Arion trapped, no one else moved, and the doll grew frighteningly quiet.
"Blasphemers!"
Grendel shouted in a voice so venomous that even his soldiers took a step back.
"How dare you challenge me? Me!"
Lightning flared once more overhead.
"And you,"
he said to the dead body of Medak.
"What a fool. A giant I can understand. He isn't a Frey. But you couldn't kill me without forfeiting your soul."
"I can," Wraith said in Frey, as he walked forward, making a point to step between Grendel and Suri, who sat with Mina on the gravel path. His words were neither loud nor boastful. They were casual to the point of absurdity, as if he were challenging a drunk to an arm-wrestling match. He drew Shigon's sword and held it loosely in one hand, the little dirk shield in the other, as he closed the distance between them.
"I am the God-Killer."
"So you're the one!" Grendel laughed. "You aren't a killer of gods, little rune. You only murdered a Frey. The Frey aren't gods. But I am."
"Good," Wraith replied. "Then this time, when I kill you, there won't be any confusion."
Grendel smiled.
"Goodbye, would-be god-killer."
Grendel raised one finger to hail the lightning. At the same time, Wraith raised the little shield, and Persephone prayed she was right. A jagged bolt flashed down from the overhead clouds and struck the shield in Wraith's hand. The jagged finger of blue-white light bounced back at Grendel. The rest was lost to the blinding flash and the thunderous crack that followed. When Persephone could see again, Wraith was still standing. Across from him, Grendel was on his knees, smoking. Without pause or hesitation, Wraith stepped forward, eliminating the remaining distance between the two. Grendel didn't move. Maybe he was already dead, but the Dorian didn't stop. He swung for the exposed neck. With a single stroke of the blade and a follow-through that carried to his other foot, Wraith severed the ringed god's head. For a moment, no one spoke or moved. The pause might have lasted only an instant, but to Persephone it stretched out for minutes. The prince, whom everyone had forgotten about, was still on the porch, staring at Grendel's severed head, which lay on its left cheek in the grass. Wandule's mouth was open, lips quivering as if trying to form words, but nothing came out. He blinked, and his brows furrowed in disbelief.
Overhead, the storm once more dispersed, and the sun shone through. The first to regain her senses was Suri, who ran to where Arion lay and began ripping away handfuls of grass. Looking down, Persephone was surprised to see Math's spear in the dirt, not too far away. Walking over, she picked it up and thumped the butt of the shaft on the ground. "Clan Wren!" she shouted, then raised the spear above her head. "Defend your homes!" They all stared at her, wide-eyed, confused.
"You heard her!"
Moya shouted, shoving those closest to her, including Tressa, whom she heaved the hardest. Tope picked up the rake that had fallen and raised it over his shoulder. Bergen the brewer found an axe. The rest of the men and women of the dolls scurried off. They disappeared into roundhouses, and just as Persephone thought they might stay inside, they returned with shovels, knives, and spears. Moya herself pulled a torch from the post near the well. Roan emerged with her little axe. Tressa had a stone knife, and even Giffert raised his crutch menacingly as the crowd reconvened with stern, angry faces. Nephron looked toward the prince, then over to the Lionhelms, who still had their weapons drawn.
"It might be best if you escorted His Highness out of here. If there's a fight, he might die, and Lothian wouldn't like that."
"Do as he says."
Arion was back on her feet, wiping mud and grass from the sleeves of her assegai.
The prince stared with tear-filled eyes at the corpse of Grendel. He shouted,
"You're a traitor!"
The words came out in a high-pitched rage, and with red-faced fury, he began to gesture feverishly with his hands. His fingers moved as if he were manipulating some complicated and invisible thing. He spoke words Persephone didn't understand, singing them with an awful voice and a halting rhythm. As he sang, a light formed before the young Frey. It whirled with a fiery streak and flew at Wraith, who raised the shield once more.
"No," Arion said. There wasn't any force to her words, no effort, but the fiery ball snuffed itself out before it got anywhere near Wraith.
Mwandule chanted once more and waved his hands, but nothing happened.
Mwandule looked livid. He tried again and again, and each time Arion blocked him with no real effort.
Once more the prince began to conjure. This time Arion shoved out her palm and spoke a word. The prince was thrown off his feet. Arion faced the line-helmed soldiers with a granite glare.
"Take the prince out of here. Now."
"Don't listen to her,"
Mwandule ordered in a shrill voice from where he lay on his back.
"Kill them all!"
The Frey in line-helms hesitated.
"They can't," Nephron said. "Only your father can sanction the death of another Frey, and I'm guessing he didn't give anyone but Grendel that lovely gift."
Mwandule looked furious. He got to his feet and yelled,
"Kill all the runes, then!"
The Lionhelms retreated from the Galantians and moved toward the mob of Dol Ren. Wraith, Malcolm, and the rest of the Dol villagers moved to meet them.
"Stop!"
Arion ordered, and the soldiers in the Lionhelms froze.
"You are Talwara guards. You have one job. You must protect the prince. He's in danger here. Take him back to his father where he'll be safe. That's your only responsibility."
"Frey can't kill Frey. I'm in no danger. And he killed Grendel. He has to die."
"Grendel was going to kill me," Arion shouted back.
"He nearly did." "That doesn't change—"
A spear flew across the yard and pierced the wooden frame of the lodge, less than a hand's length from the prince's face. Mandalay gasped, staggered backward, and fell again.
Malcolm stood in the courtyard without his spear.
"Frey can't kill Frey," Malcolm shouted. "But if you stay, we'll kill you."
The prince got back to his feet, his eyes filled with fear.
"Go home, Mandalay," Arion said.
You're defying the law. I'm your prince and you must obey me.
I don't care.
Go home. Leave, all of you.
Mandalay looked fearfully at the mob gathered before him. He crossed the porch and descended the steps. As he did, the lion soldiers rushed to create a barrier around the prince. As a group, they marched toward the horses.
"I'll tell my father how you defied him. I'll tell him how you protected Grendel's killer. He'll declare war. He'll send an army. An army of Mirilith."
"Ouch!"
Arion shouted. The prince climbed atop a horse. Then all eyes watched as he and his guards filed out of the Dáil. When they were gone, Arion waved her hand, and both gate doors slammed shut. She turned towards the lodge and staggered, falling to her knees once more.
"Take her back to the lodge," Nephron said.
"Little help!"
Grigor shouted from inside his bubble.
"Getting hard to breathe."
"Oh, sorry."
Arion looked embarrassed, and the bubble burst. Moya and Bryn began escorting Arion up the steps when she stopped and looked at Nephron.
"Are we friends now?"
"I hate Mirilith," Nephron replied. "Today you've demonstrated precisely why. But,
well, I also hate winter, mud, and biting flies.
But I've learned to live with them."
"Thank you for saving Mina,"
Suri told Wraith. She had an arm around the wolf's neck. He was still in the center of the yard, and had put his sword away, but continued to hold the shield. At the sound of her voice, Wraith lifted his gaze from Grendel's corpse and smiled at the girl and her wolf. He reached out and stroked Mina's head.
"Can't let anything happen to the world's wisest wolf, can we?"
Suri stared at him for a moment, tears in her eyes. Then, without warning, Suri threw her arms around Wraith and hugged him.
Chapter 28. The First Chair.
I still remember when Persephone stood on those steps, when she faced us and said everything would be all right. I believed her. I think everyone did. Persephone was not a magician or a mystic, but she performed magic that day. She gave us hope. The Book of Bryn.
Maeve was buried along with Jason the Digger and Neft the Builder, both of whom had been struck by lightning. Lynn the Beadmaker was laid with them as well. She had been crushed by half of the Killian's flaming home. The Galantians took care of Stryker, Medak, and Grendel's remains, the sight of which forever shattered the notion that the Frey couldn't be killed. They bled and died like any mortal. The display of power when Arion and Grendel fought, however, demonstrated that some Frey did indeed possess godlike power. Suitable to a day when so many had died, and it appeared the world had slipped farther toward an abyss, almost everyone on Dáil Rén acted with quiet reserve. In addition to those killed in the battle, the villagers mourned the passing of their chieftain and the others, like Hegna, who had vanished overnight. Surprised to learn that Tressa had no idea where her husband had gone, Persephone told her of Conagher's death.
The woman faced the news with teary eyes but a straight back. Persephone told her that Conniger and the others had formed a rescue party after hearing about Maeve's and Suri's mission regarding Grin the Brown. Sadly, the bear had killed him and the others. She didn't feel it was necessary to explain all the details about how Conniger and the Brown had faced each other. As disagreeable as Tressa was, Persephone wanted to preserve the new widow's memory of her husband. No one should experience what she had with Reglan. Suri surprised Persephone by showing no hurry to leave. After all that had happened, she had expected the mystic to depart immediately after the battle. Instead, she found the girl sitting beside Mina against the south wall.
I don't suppose this, what just happened, will be the end of it. The end of the warning you originally brought me.
Suri shook her head.
Still not big enough. This is the start. Just the turning of leaves. Winter is still on its way.
Persephone frowned and nodded.
I suppose you'll be leaving us to return to the wood.
Suri looked up as if roused from sleep.
You know, this could be your home, Persephone said.
Suri looked skeptically at the massive hole in the ground that was still bubbling goo, then toward the shattered gap in the western wall. Her eyes scanned across dozens of scorch marks on the grass and through the roofs of homes.
Okay, Persephone shrugged. So, Ren has seen better days. When?
Persephone smiled.
So maybe I should come live with you.
She sat down beside the mystic and rested her back against the wall.
That was quite clever, what you did to Arion's bandages. The markings in the little dark caves block the spirits. I've never been able to start a fire in there and can't read bones. Nothing of the spirit world works when surrounded by those marks.
You're very smart. You know that. Suri shrugged. Her gaze was focused beyond the opening in the wall.
Maeve. Who are she?
Maeve? She was the keeper of ways for Ren. The one who remembered all the old stories from our past. Luckily, she taught others, passing on what she knew. Brynn, for example. She loves stories and has a great memory.
What was she like? Who was she married to? Maeve never married. She had a daughter.
Persephone nodded.
She wasn't married to the father. You know who he was?
Persephone drew up her knees and straightened her filthy skirt over them. Her clothes were ruined, stained with blood. The blood was probably one of the reasons why Tressa hadn't questioned the explanation surrounding Conniger's death. That, and perhaps the widow already knew the truth.
I don't think it matters anymore. That's all over. All in the past.
Not all of it, Suri said.
What do you mean? I think her daughter survived. Maeve's daughter?
No, that was a story Conniger made up. Maeve's daughter died in the forest where she was abandoned 14 years... Persephone stopped and stared at Suri in sudden revelation.
14... Might be more. Might be less.
Suri finished for her.
Is the father still alive?
She asked without looking back. Her stare was still focused on the hole in the wall.
No. He died a month ago. Conniger killed him and blamed it on the Brown.
Suri finally looked at her then. The tattoos around her eyes were bound up in thought.
20 years ago, I married Reglan, Persephone said. Over the years, I bore my husband 3 sons. One died shortly after being born. Duncan barely made it to the age of 3. Mon grew to be a fine young man, but the brown took him from me. I never had a daughter, but I always wished for one. My husband was blessed with a daughter, but he never had the chance to meet her. Nobody knew except Reglan, Conniger, and Maeve. Tears filled Suri's eyes, and drops spilled down Persephone's own cheeks. Mina's head came up, and she looked at both of them, as if they were insane. Wraith sat outside Roan's roundhouse, one of the few near the center of the doll that had suffered no damage at all. He was holding the broken hilt of his father's sword. Compared with Shigon's blade, it looked like it had been forged by a child.
"There you are,"
Malcolm walked toward him. The ex-slave had set down his bulky shield, but continued to use the spear like a staff, walking in a most un-warrior-like fashion. He took a seat beside Wraith, his legs stretched out and sandaled feet crossed. Together the two stared at the breath of the doll and its people, who, having narrowly avoided a butchering or some magical cataclysm, were already back to their labors, fixing the hole in the wall and tending to gardens, sheep, and pots.
"Just another day."
"What are you going to do with that?" Malcolm asked, pointing at the broken sword. "I don't know. Seems stupid to carry it." Wraith drove the fractured blade that had started everything into the dirt beside him. He let go, and the sword handle quivered slightly. "Probably should have left her with my father. No one would have stolen it. Who'd want it?" Malcolm nodded in solidarity, and Wraith realized that was what he liked most about the man. Malcolm was inclined to understand, or at least to agree. Another holdover from years in slavery, perhaps, but Wraith found it a virtue, nevertheless. Across the doll, Mina lay down beside Suri and Persephone, as they talked near the wall.
"Everyone should have such a loyal friend."
"What will you do now?" Malcolm asked.
"I don't know about that either."
"Good to see you're on top of things.
Everything's changed, you know." He looked at the planted sword. "I'd grown up in my father's shadow, fighting to survive, fighting to prove my worth to him. That was the stick I measured myself by. Miserable as he was, my father was all I had left." Again, Malcolm nodded. "We're both adrift without a rudder." Wraith returned the nod and for the first time realized that both he and Malcolm had been freed that day on the bank of the Burn River. And just like Malcolm, he didn't have a clue what to do with that independence. Wraith was completely on his own for the first time in his life. He had dreamed of such freedom, as if it were a faraway place, a made-up land that didn't really exist. But landing in Dol Ren by accident, he was lost. He had 100 potential directions, a multitude of choices, and the enormity of the options left him paralyzed. Freedom, he discovered, had built a greater prison than his family or clan had. In his imaginings, he fantasized about such grand things as a warm home made of wood, a granary with enough wheat to last a whole winter, a loyal woman he could talk to, a well that served up water that didn't taste of metal, and not one, but 2 thick blankets. Crazy thoughts, but dreams always were.
No one held